Blog Talk Radio.
Hey Keith, it's me. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. How does it sound?
You sound like you're really close to the microphone.
Yeah, it was a little close. How about now?
This
is about a foot away.
Yeah, you sound like you're... sounds better, but it sounds like you're really
okay.
In like a hollow room.
Yeah, maybe let me take it down one peg. So how about now?
Give me a
same.
Five count.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I think this is about what are we speaking at?
It's okay. Not better, but not worse.
Okay. I'm trying to think if there's. Let me see if I can redirect the mic a little bit better. I'm right on. Okay, how about right now? So I'm like right in front of the mic where I think I should be.
Yeah, it sounds like you're good.
Okay, cool. I want to also check if you wouldn't mind the levels on these three headsets. So this one sounds fine, but I'm going to give you a check on the others. Excuse me
sure.
1 second. Let me switch it up.
Yep.
All right, do you want to say a few things here?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Interesting. I think this one might have a bad wire. Let me just check this real quick. How about now?
Hey, Mike,
Can you say something?
Hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm going to put you on hold.
Yeah, this one's going bad. I'm going to try another one. All right, can you say something now for this headphone? Keith, are you there?
Hey, are you there?
Yeah, sorry. Can you, I've got a different set on now. Just give me a few, 10 counts.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay.
6.
This one's good. It looks like this other one might be going bad, though. Okay.
Yeah.
We already have one dead port.
Yeah.
Let me switch this up. Let me just see if I can play around with it and get it to work.
Okay.
Just bear with me for a second, please.
By the way, that was Lois calling me. She said, turns out she's going to be in Belleville after all. She's done
for the LA meeting?
Moment. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So,
here, let me... Yeah, this one's dead. Okay. All right, I think this... Let me see if I'm going to play around and see if this port is better, if it's the wire. Okay, give me 1 second. Okay, Keith, can you say a few things for me?
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
All right, keep going. I'm gonna try to jiggle this cord, see if I can get it to work.
Check 1, check 2, check 1, check 2. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay.
All right. I guess that's good. Wait, one more. I'm going to put it back now. All right. Try it again.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4.
All right. That's fine. It looks like one port is completely dead now. It looks like we have a second one. I think I maybe told you a little bit about this, but we may have to discuss getting a new headphone amp. I don't think this will be that expensive, but I'll bring that up with them. But it looks like we're down to just like two active ports. One is just completely fuzz when I'm plugged in, and the other one, the right side connection is cut off for the headphone. So
yeah.
I think we'll be able to make do for now, but yeah, I'll bring that up with them and see if they want to do anything about it.
Okay.
All right, I think I'm good. Thanks, man.
All right, man, no problem. Bye. All right,
Hello.
Hi.
What's going on?
Nothing.
I'm going to jump with you.
If he's not here, I'm going to run up right here.
Okay. All right.
Do you need tape for that?
Do we?
Got some snacks.
I didn't get lunch yet.
No.
No. I didn't plan on sitting in the appellate meeting.
You didn't plan? No.
I was just going to listen in, but I got sucked into attending in person and talking, and I didn't eat.
No.
Do you know the phone number for him? The gentleman, is it on the invite?
Invite. The one that Kelsey sent out?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's on there. I mean, I have it. We can send it out again if we need to.
We probably have to send it to Jeff.
Okay.
I don't know if he's going to know what number to call.
I think it's the same one every time, by the way. Like, I don't think it generates one we call. We just have, like, a call number. That's always our call number. Something you should be aware of. This headphone amp, the jacks are going bad. I think I may have told you before. So this one is just no good now. This third one here,
mm-hmm.
And this one, this one is like kind of bad on one side. You have to like jiggle it to get it to work on one side. The ones for like Scott and me are fine. One and four. So this one is going. That's you. And so that's like
with the jiggle one.
Right. So that's going like that's kind of bad. That's not all the way bad yet. And this one is just not good.
Right.
So if you're cool, just make me do with it. You know, that's fine. But just letting you know, this may be something on our horizon. I don't think this is like super expensive. If we had to buy this particular part to replace, I think it would be like $100 or less probably. But just be aware that I think it will. I mean, this happens over time and like. Maybe
yeah.
This is like just not the greatest one of these. You know, I don't think we got like the super high end one, but this is what it is. So do you have any interest in seeing some of this stuff? You know, obviously I'm here like as much as I can for this, but do you want to be ready just in case, you know, an eventuality would come up like last week if we had to do it, just so you know.
Yeah.
Some of this stuff. It's not
yeah.
super complicated. Okay. So you can stay there. I'm just going to turn this around so you can kind of see. I can show you, I mean, the episode setting up stuff is just like administrative. I think it's pretty self-explanatory once you get into it. Really, the only things you need to know, and I've already connected it, but there's like a, so there's an option up here to call in, which is how we like interface the mixer with the recording as opposed to like dialing in on the phone. And you just click that, a little thing pops up. And if you're listening on the headphones, you just have to like click one and it will connect this and it shows, you know, we're connected here. So the other thing that happens is when somebody dials in, this is like our participant list down here, right? Obviously right now it's just us. So when he dials in, he doesn't just go live automatically. We have to click this microphone button and that puts him live. And you can just listen to him if you want or mute him with this button here. But So that's how you put somebody live. And then if we need to do the intro, intermission, and stuff, you know, you click play over here, and these are the levels for those various clips. And that's kind of it. I mean, you know, it's pretty simple, I think.
Yeah.
For the most part. So, and the rest of this stuff is just, like, this is pretty much set to go right now. The only thing that might change is if he wanted to use that, like, headset with the built-in mic, you just plug that in here. And so right now, like, these are, when you have these lit up, the mute buttons, I mean, they're muted. And so, like, right now, we only have this one active mic for him. And if we wanted, you know, for instance, if I wanted to plug it in on one, we'll just do that, and that underneath the line. And then, like, the rest of this is pretty much where it needs to be at, you know, the levels for here. So I checked it with Keith a little while ago, so it sounds good. So you shouldn't really have to mess with any of this stuff. And then beyond that, like, if you just, you know, I don't know if you've navigated much with Blog Talk with the website, but you just go to, you know, blogtalkradio.com. We're already logged in. If you want to go to a particular episode, you go over there, you go to episodes. This is the one that we're on right now. And if you were to, like, click this, it just takes you over to, like, the studio if it's one that's scheduled. And then you're on this menu and you can kind of do all this stuff here. So pretty much it. And then if you needed to log into this computer, for instance, this computer is multifunction 2014, the password. I can email that to you, too, if you want. that's pretty much it. So not terribly complicated.
I'm still making nervous.
Yeah.
He makes me nervous.
Why? Because he's always springing things on you last night.
Mm-hmm.
Making changes.
Mm-hmm. And you never know, like, what movie you're going to be in.
Yeah. We'll see. Hopefully he's feeling good today.
There's some good ones today.
Aquarius. A lot of it. A lot of some. Yeah, I wonder how he feels with, you know.
Hello, it was.
What's going on, Scott? How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Got you set up over there.
Oh, beautiful. Look at this. What a team. You know,
yeah.
Some places it takes like thousands to do a broadcast.
I ask you to sit in the other chair so you can be on the mic. Okay.
Sure. You can ask. I'll do my best to accommodate.
Yeah. Let me make some small adjustments for where you're sitting.
Arrivederci, Roma.
I want to scooch over just a little bit.
Good.
There we go. Bye.
Goodbye to Rome. How do you keep the music playing?
Okay.
How, you know, they didn't even ask me. I could have done a song with Lady Gaga, the Oscars. It would have been nice.
Yeah. It
would have been beautiful.
I just must not have your number.
You know, I think that could be it.
Yeah.
All right. Is this good?
Yeah, say a few more words for me.
I love you.
Wow.
Oh.
Getting deep there, bud.
You didn't expect that, did you?
No.
But, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we're good to go. Do you want to do you have Jeff's number? Do you want to text him the phone number just in case? Oh, there he is. Jeff's on the line.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing good. Just
well,
another
look,
day in the life.
Yeah, there you go. I want to start out by saying that I love you, man. I'm showing
that.
The love in the new year. It's a new style. It's the softer, gentler me. I don't know how it's going to work out, but we'll just sort of roll with it. And then, but before we get into the episode, I wanted to talk to you off the record for a second.
Sure.
We, being Hinshaw, has formed a strategic alliance with the RPC firm, which is based in London, but it has offices in Singapore and Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And it's really just another vehicle for us to provide services to our insurer clients and to help find solutions for the challenges and the opportunities that confront them internationally. They're a great group of lawyers. We've sort of been working informally. And I mention that to you because the firms really didn't even see any need to announce this, but there was a British reporter from Law Week who, and as you know, these alliances are becoming more and more common in Europe. And so he was going to run with the story anyway. So we issued a release and we spoke with him. What day is today? We spoke with him yesterday, actually. And then, you know, this morning, our time, they did run a story. And I just alert that you to that because we'll probably issue a press release today or in the morning. I don't know if that's something Law 360 would be interested in.
I think that's, yeah, I mean, our legal industry team reports on a lot of partnerships and mergers. So, yeah, thanks for flagging that. I'll loop them in because it used to be we had just a handful of reporters who did that sort of stuff part-time, but now we have, I think, like five reporters who strictly do legal industry stuff. So, yeah, so I'll loop them in. And then keep an eye out for that press release. See if we can't get something up about it.
Okay. I'll just send it to you then if it's all right and leave it to you to loop in who you think is best. And just for example, they do annually a international insurance law review that came out a few weeks ago. We contributed the U.S. section. And then I think following you, they're going to be in the States in mid-March. So we may do a broadcast with them and talk about some international insurance issues.
Excellent. So it sounds like there's a lot of things in the works.
Yeah, you know, it's some fun stuff. But as I say, we've been actually sort of informally doing this for a while. And, you know, this day and age with everything being global, you know, it's a good way to serve our clients and, you know, not ourselves become an international firm with all of the cost and things that entails.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, thank you. I thought your script was excellent. All I basically did was take what you wrote and just put my parts in there. And I think it's good. I think 3 and 3 is sort of a nice number and will probably get us in the 20 to 30 minute range, which is where we want to be. And then I dropped the ball a little bit in delaying this first broadcast to almost the end of February, but it's been a little crazy. So we could always do one. Maybe we'll do another one like in July and do some mid-year cases. How's that sound?
It sounds like a plan. Yeah. And I figured typing up a script would be easier than, I don't know if it was the last time, like the mid-year or the 2018 one that we did in January, but or one or the other. I think I just went off of memory, which resulted in a lot of long pauses and you guys probably having to edit. So I now
oh,
I have
well,
a script.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. But you know, it was fine. It came out well and. That's what Mike lives for, is to do the edits and stuff. Otherwise, he'd just be, you know, listening to a bunch of dumb lawyers holding meetings. So he enjoys this. And he's nominated for being Insurance Law Radio's Producer of the Year.
Ah, okay.
But there's some stiff competition because, you know, it's – I mean, I will say this. There are a lot of talented producers that contribute. And of course, Carrie Epgrave is nominated for Executive Producer of the Year. But she's sort of fallen out of favor because she hasn't been laughing at my jokes lately. She's sort of been ignoring me. So her nomination is in jeopardy. So if you're ready, we'll just let the music roll and we'll get into it.
I'm good to go.
Hinshaw Insurance Law Radio is on the air. From Los Angeles, I'm Royal Oaks of ABC News and the law firm of Hinshaw & Culbertson, LLP, inviting you to join us for Hinshaw Law Radio. This program features prominent lawyers and insurance industry professionals discussing insurance and reinsurance cases, issues, and developments. Before we get started, a reminder that the information on Insurance Law Radio is provided for general information purposes only. Nothing stated in the program constitutes legal advice or creates any attorney-client relationship. You should consult directly with an attorney of your choosing if you wish to obtain any advice with respect to any claim or matter. Any views expressed are those of the guests and are not necessarily the views of Hinshaw & Culbertson, LLP, or any of its clients. And now we go to Chicago and your host for Insurance Law Radio, the co-chair of Hinshaw & Culbertson's National Insurance Services Practice Group, Scott Seaman.
Thank you, Royal Oaks, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Hinshaw Insurance Law Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. This is our initial broadcast for 2019, and we have some great episodes planned for the season this year to keep you abreast of all the developments in the insurance and reinsurance world. And we begin the season by looking at some of the key decisions of 2018 and highlighting some of the key decisions that will be coming out in 2019. We are pleased to welcome our special guest, Jeff Sistrunk. Jeff is a senior insurance reporter at Law 360. He has reported on insurance law and regulation at Law 360 for the past several years. Jeff is a friend of the program, and he enlightens insurers, policyholders, practitioners, and courts all on insurance cases and developments throughout the year. So welcome back, Jeff. Thanks for joining us on Insurance Law Radio.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, there have been many cases that we could discuss from last year and also cases that are pending this year. But ladies and gentlemen, Jeff narrowed the list to three decisions in 2018 and three for 2019. So we're going to start off and topping the list of key decisions in 2018 is Keyspan. And of course, the New York Court of Appeals has determined way back to the Consolidated Edison case that based upon the during the policy period limitation in most general liability policies that New York is a pro rata jurisdiction. And a couple years back in Viking Pump, the High Court said other language could alter the result, and in that case found that the prior insurance and non-cumulation clauses required an all sums allocation. So we move forward to 2018, and in a much-watched decision, the court handed the insurers a victory in Keyspan. And Jeff, why don't you tell our audience about that case?
Sure. So as you noted, this was one of the most talked about, if not the most talked about, insurance decisions of 2018. So in this case, the New York Court of Appeals refused to acknowledge an unavailability exception to the pro rata allocation formula, which, as insurance counsel are aware, is often used to sort out coverage for environmental contamination and other long-tail claims implicating many policy periods. So the unanimous New York High Court affirmed a state appellate panel's ruling rejecting Keyspan Gas East Corporation's call to apply the unavailability exception in this massive dispute with insurance carriers over coverage for many years of environmental liabilities. So just to recap, under a pro rata scheme, a policyholder generally has to pay a share of its own long-tail liability costs for years when it had no policies in place. But if the unavailability exception is applied, the policyholder doesn't have to cover costs incurred during periods it was unavailable to buy a specific type of insurance out in the marketplace. And instead, those costs are spread among the company's insurers. So here, the New York justices agreed with Keyspan's insurer, Century Indemnity Company, that the unavailability exception is incompatible with insurance policy terms mandating pro rata allocation, namely language limiting the insurer's liability to losses and occurrences happening during the policy period. And the ruling was widely viewed as a decisive win by insurance carriers, which have long argued that the recognition of an unavailability exception would unfairly expand their liability.
Well, that's exactly right, Jeff. And, of course, a couple key things about that decision. It reaffirms the notion that generally New York is a pro rata or a default pro rata allocation because, in that case, the policies did not have non-cum clauses and it was a pro rata allocation. And as you mentioned, insurance unavailability really is a key battleground now in pro rata jurisdictions. Most courts coming down the way the New York Court of Appeals did and rule that the policyholder is responsible for years when insurance is unavailable. And that could be toward the end of a coverage block, like post-1985, when generally absolute pollution exclusions and many policies to asbestos defendant companies had asbestos exclusions, that those periods are the responsibility of the policyholder, as are periods of time earlier on when they had no liability insurance or had relatively low limits of liability insurance. So a big win for the insurers and Keyspan. And the next case is actually two decisions. You got a little tricky on us there and put another one in there, but they're two decisions dealing with the subject of fishing, and that's fishing with a PH rather than fishing with a pole. So, Jeff, why don't you tell us about those decisions from the U.S. Courts of Appeal for the Second and the Sixth Circuits?
Sure. So these two federal appeals courts granted back-to-back wins to policyholders this past summer. And they ruled that two companies' losses to email-based phishing theft schemes triggered the insurer's coverage obligations under computer fraud policies. So Second Circuit panel of that court kicked things off on July 6th. When it upheld a lower court's decision that federal insurance company must cover a $4.8 million loss that a company called Metadata Solutions Incorporated suffered when it was tricked into wiring money overseas by fraudsters who posed as Metadata's president in a series of email messages. And then a week later, a Sixth Circuit panel reversed a lower court's decision and ruled that Travelers Casualty Insurance Company of America has to cover more than $800,000 that a tool manufacturer, American Tooling Center Incorporated, lost in a similar scenario to that in the Metadata case when thieves posing as a vendor used fraudulent emails to deceive the company into wiring money to a sham bank account. So these two cases illustrate a trend that has arisen in the coverage space. Courts are grappling with these new exposures under legacy policy language that, may have been written before, a certain type of exposure here, these phishing or another term for it is social engineering cases became prevalent. So both appellate panels rejected the insurer's contentions that the computer fraud provisions in question were designed to cover only instances of direct hacking into policyholders' computers and not these manipulative email-based schemes. So this could be an instance where as the marketplace catches up, there might be new exclusions written into policies, these computer fraud policies, to avoid results like you saw here. And at the same time, you might also see carriers offering computer fraud policies that are specifically designed to cover these exposures, which is already the case with several insurance carriers.
And Jeff, were these commercial crime fraud policies, both of them?
Yes. And they were written on, I believe, fairly standard forms didn't specifically touch on the exposure of phishing or social engineering losses.
And what's interesting, of course, is we still don't have a groundswelling of decisions in the context of cyber and phishing claims, but we've got a couple of things going on. We've got a mounting body of decisions under more traditional general liability and first-party all-risk policies that in the former are analogous to any other sort of coverage B-type analysis. And lot of coverage defenses when cyber claims are presented against those policies. And then when you have various generations of cyber-related policies, before we've gotten a lot of court decisions, we've actually had the insurers writing that coverage modify their forms, sometimes multiple times. So we're not having yet that body of precedent matching up. And we're seeing companies, as they're experiencing a claims history, continuing to modify the policy forms to reach that right level of providing coverage and value in the product, and yet limiting their exposure in ways that make sense. So I think we're going to be talking about cyber coverage issues, Jeff, probably for decades to come.
Absolutely.
So we go to the last and final of your key decisions from 2018, and the issue of whether defective construction constitutes an accident or occurrence has been subject to decisions all across the United States, and the Ohio Supreme Court weighed in on the issue last October, correct?
That's right, and this is an issue that as practitioners are well aware has been kicking around in the courts for decades, and here, as you noted, the Ohio Supreme Court went back and clarified its past precedent and stretched it a little bit into the context we had here. So the Ohio Supreme Court ruled in October that damage from a subcontractor's faulty work isn't an accident triggering an insurance or an insurer's defense obligation. They spurned a nationwide trend favoring coverage for such claims and reinstating a lower court's ruling that a builder wasn't covered for litigation over alleged construction defects at a hotel on Ohio Northern University's campus. So what the Ohio High Court did here is they concluded that the reasoning of the court's 2012 decision in Westfield Insurance versus Custom Agri Systems, in which it found that property damage stemming from a policyholder's own defective work isn't an accidental occurrence giving rise to an insurer's duty to defend. They said that Westfield's reasoning applies with equal force to damage tied to the shoddy work of a policyholder's subcontractors. So more specifically, applying Custom Agri or AGRA, the state justices held that Cincinnati Insurance Company has no duty to defend a general contractor called Charles Construction Services Incorporated in a lawsuit accusing Charles and its subcontractors of performing deficient work on a luxury hotel and conference center at ONU. The ruling kept Ohio among four states whose high courts have held that damage resulting from defective work is not an accident, according to a recent survey of courts' findings on that issue. And conversely, that report found that the top courts or lawmakers of 26 states have said that damage stemming from subcontractors' shoddy work can constitute an occurrence. So it's an issue that, as we've discussed here, is continuing to be litigated, and I imagine it will continue in the future until we get a definitive answer out of all.
Out of all the states, and we certainly are working towards that. At end with, as you note, many decisions on the issue. Well, I have to thank you, Jeff. There are a lot of cases you could choose from. 2018 was a busy year by courts rendering coverage rulings, and I think you picked out three excellent decisions. But let's look ahead and look in key decisions coming up in 2019. And the first of those cases actually is scheduled for oral argument today. And this is a case that I would say said shockwaves throughout the industry, because all of a sudden the claims adjuster who's pulling in, I don't know, 50, 100, 125,000 a year, whatever it may be, now faces mega millions, if not more, in exposure in the state of Washington. And why don't you talk about that, Jeff?
I love
a parade. I didn't know if we lost you there, Jeff. He'll edit that out. I'll give you a lead in again. So, okay. Jeff, why don't you fill us in on what's happening in the state of Washington that's got everybody's attention?
Certainly. So, it was actually this morning, February 26th, Washington State's High Court heard oral arguments in the case of, I'm going to try my best here, Chiodella versus Allstate Insurance Company. And Allstate,
well done. I was avoiding mentioning the case because I didn't figure I would pronounce it correctly.
Well, I'm sure I'm at least a few hairs off on the pronunciation there. At least judging from the volume of amicus filings, very high-stakes matter. Allstate and one of its adjusters there in Washington named Tracy Smith are challenging an appellate panel's ruling that insurance adjusters can be found individually liable for bad faith and breaches of the state's consumer protection law. So going back in time, just providing a little background, in March 2018, panel of Washington's State Appeals Court overruled a trial court's decision and found that Allstate policyholder Moon Chiodella could file an individual bad faith claim against Allstate's adjuster, Ms. Smith, in a dispute over coverage for an auto accident. The panel said that relevant state law makes no distinction between corporations and individuals when it comes to asserting a cause of action for bad faith. And as I noted, the case has attracted a number of amicus briefs from concerned insurance industry groups, defense counsel groups, and I believe GEICO also weighed in as an amicus. The American Insurance Association and several other property and casualty insurance trade organizations, for example, argued in a joint brief they filed that the imposition of individual liability on adjusters is, quote, an excessive means of regulating insurer conduct and encourages litigation. So as you can tell from that, the stakes of the case are high for insurers and adjusters doing business in the state of Washington.
Well, you can imagine our advice has been sought by several clients on the issue. I'm going to defer from addressing publicly the steps insurers would want to take in response to this decision until we hear from the Washington Supreme Court. Hopefully they'll do the right thing in reverse. But if not, it's an issue we'll be addressing in the future here on Insurance Law Radio. And Jeff, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just affirming what you said there.
Okay. You can cut this little thing out. So, Jeff, we return to, you know, core issues that we seem to come back to a lot, which are issues of trigger allocation and unavailability of insurance. And the Connecticut Supreme Court is expected to weigh in on those issues in the Vanderbilt case. And that's a name I could pronounce, so I did. Jeff, why don't you give us the 411 on that decision?
Certainly. So, the Connecticut Supreme Court, as you mentioned, is poised to weigh in on a number of issues that frequently come up in asbestos, environmental, and other long-tail claims, including the proper trigger of coverage, the application of the pollution exclusion, and the aforementioned unavailability exception that also came up in the Keyspan case in New York. And all these questions came up in Vanderbilt Minerals LLC's long-running battle with a group of excess insurers over coverage for thousands of asbestos injury claims. So let's focus on the unavailability exception, which is arguably the most contentious issue being reviewed by the Connecticut justices. In this case, in contrast to the Keyspan matter, a panel of the state appeals court in Connecticut determined that the state's law permits such an exception to the pro rata allocation formula. So here the panel applied the rule because Vanderbilt was unable to get coverage after 1985 for individuals' claims for asbestos injuries allegedly caused by exposure to Vanderbilt's industrial talc. The excess insurers are arguing on appeal to the Connecticut Supreme Court that the adoption of an unavailability exception here flouts the clear language of Vanderbilt's policies and creates an unfair outcome for the insurers by forcing them to cover injuries that occurred outside their policy periods. And according to the insurers, the exception would effectively provide Vanderbilt coverage it didn't pay for. Then in contrast, it's Vanderbilt's position that a rejection of the unavailability exception under these circumstances would undermine the very reason why courts originally choose pro-rata allocation in the first place. They characterize those that reason as maximizing insurance resources, distributing the burdens fairly, incentivizing insurers to continue issuing coverage, and incentivizing policyholders to buy as best as coverage when it's available. So it'll be interesting to see whether the Connecticut Supreme Court affirms the appeals panel on that issue or if it follows Keyspan and other insurer-friendly decisions on this subject. But one thing's for certain, I think everybody on both sides of the bar will be hoping for a decision that's a little more concise than the 150-plus page ruling that the appeals panel issued in this case.
Yeah, that definitely caused some trees their lives, no question about that. And hopefully the insurers obviously have the right argument. Hopefully the Connecticut Supreme Court will see it that way and reverse on the ground with respect to the issues of allocation and unavailability. Well, Jeff, most of our listeners are familiar with the musical group Guns N' Roses. The last of your top three cases to watch in 2019, let's call it Guns and Occurrences.
Yeah, so that's an apt way to characterize the issues in this case. Yeah, so it's, you know, a very interesting set of facts, to say the least. So the Pennsylvania Supreme Court is going to consider the outer limits of what constitutes an accidental occurrence as it weighs Erie Insurance Exchange's challenge of the state appeals panel's ruling that the insurer is required to defend a gunman's estate amid claims by a man who was shot in a scuffle with the late policyholder upon walking in on a homicide, suicide, and oral arguments in that case are set for April 11th. And so just going back over the history a little bit, in November 2017, so it's been a while since the appellate panel issued its ruling, the panel held that Erie must defend the estate of a man named Harold McCutcheon in a lawsuit brought by Richard Carley, who was shot in the face when McCutcheon's gun discharged during a struggle between the two men back in September 2013. The fight took place after McCutcheon had shot and killed Terry McCutcheon, his ex-wife, and Mr. Carley's girlfriend. Mr. McCutcheon had subsequently taken his own life after wounding Mr. Carley. So the appeals panel said that Carley's allegations that McCutcheon's gun had fired accidentally during the fight defeated Erie Insurance Exchange's efforts to deny the McCutcheon estate a defense based on policy language excluding intentional acts from coverage. So Erie has told the Pennsylvania Supreme Court Carley's injury didn't result from an accident under any common understanding of the term, while Carley has argued that the accidental discharge of the gun fulfilled the requirement of an accidental occurrence. And several amicus parties have weighed in this case as well. The insurance industry, Amici, has suggested that a decision affirming the appellate panel could potentially incentivize, you know, these types of intentional torts, you know, by allowing policyholders to pass the buck to their insurance carriers. So while the case involves what could be described as unique or extreme facts, it's possible that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court's treatment of the occurrence issue may influence the outcomes of other cases involving instances of alleged intentional conduct by policyholders. So we just have to stay tuned and see how narrowly or broadly the Pennsylvania High Court treats this issue.
Well, here, of course, on Insurance Law Radio, we look at guns, but we focus on the coverage aspects and avoid the Second Amendment issues. So these are some of the cases to watch in 2019. And if you follow Jeff in Law 360, you will find out how the courts decide these cases. And you will also learn of other interesting decisions. And whether you follow Law 360 regularly or not, we're going to try and drag Jeff back in here this summer to find out what happened in these cases and talk about other critical coverage decisions coming down in 2019. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us on Insurance Law Radio. We look forward to reading your articles and to seeing you back here with the microphone later in the year.
It was a pleasure.
We want everybody to tune into our next episode. I'm not going to tell you what it's about. We'll leave you with a little bit of a teaser. It will have an international flair. This is Scott Seaman thanking you for joining us. We look forward to bringing you the next episode of Hinshaw Insurance Law Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Take us home, Royal Oaks.
You've been listening to Hinshaw & Culbertson LLP's Insurance Law Radio. The information contained in this program is provided solely for general informational purposes and does not constitute legal advice. For information on past and upcoming Insurance Law Radio programs, visit the Insurance Services Practice Group page of www.hinshawlaw.com. This is Royal Oaks thanking you for joining us and inviting you to join us for the next episode of Insurance Law Radio.
How long was it?
I think it's something like half an hour.
Okay, good. It was a good time. It felt like it went pretty quickly.
Yeah, it was less than half an hour. It was good.
So, good job, Jeff, as always. We'll have our crew as they compete for these Emmys, or are they Emmys or Oscars? But they're going to compete. They'll do a nice job editing out just those couple things. And
it was too bad.
Yeah, we'll get this up tomorrow, you think?
It depends on how long it takes for Kevin to edit.
So either tomorrow or early the next day.
Great. We'll put all of our Twitter resources towards promoting it, as always.
Beautiful. Do we have the description and the pictures? Ready, we've got all that stuff. Jeff, at some point, you are magical, but you're probably aging like the rest of us. So maybe next year we'll get a new picture, unless you want one now. Maybe have you, I don't know, doing something, maybe in a race car or something.
I'll see what I can do. I'm actually, I was thinking about going and getting new headshots done. The one I use on my Twitter account, I don't know what I was doing that morning, but my hair was a disaster. So
I thought it looked good, man.
I appreciate it.
If that's a bad hair day for you, you're doing okay.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Yeah, so I'll keep an eye out for the press release on that new partnership. And actually, while I have you, I'll just give you a little advance notice. One of the Wisconsin cases that we talked about last year is coming down on Thursday. It's the Ixthus Medical case, the duty to defend case, and dealing with intentional violation exclusion. I'm going to take a look at that and potentially do an analysis. So I'll circle back. I'm actually I'm headed out to Big Bear to ski on Friday, but I'm hoping to get the ball rolling if this case turns out to be worthy of a follow-up on Thursday.
That sounds good.
I'll circle back.
be very, very careful skiing. We can't afford to have you out.
Yeah, so
our new managing partner went skiing and did something to out of his shoulder or his arm, but he's hooked up in a little bit of a sling.
Yikes. Well, I think we're going to be taking it easy because me and my brother are going to be teaching my niece how to ski, so I think we're going to be sticking to the greens for the most part.
Yeah, you know, and then be by the fireplace drinking and keeping warm, you know. You know, you've got nothing
Absolutely.
To prove. All right, buddy. Well, thank you as always, and we'll get this stuff out to you. The release probably tomorrow and the episode tomorrow or the next day.
That sounds great. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.